Welcome. This is Winning at Life. It's the Daily Wrap. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks. This is live Financial Talk Radio.
I'm your co-host, James Parker. Coming up on the show today, annuities have not been doing too well the last few years. You know, low interest rates. When an annuity is not the right financial tool for your retirement needs. Also, we're going to talk a little bit about what happened in the market. More record territory. If you have a financial situation, not quite sure what to do, you better call Gregory. 504-260-0995. You can also reach out to us via the Gregory Ricks and Associates app. You can send us a text message there. You're a couple thumb pushes away from either calling the show or calling the office. Find out when our next live event is. Find us all the little social media hookups. We got some YouTube action going on. We got some Facebook action. We do Twitter. We're on Periscope right now. Hello, guys. Pump hearts. All right, so let's get started. Record territory. How much longer is this rally going to last? Is this still the Trump effect, or is this something else? I tried to go back and watch Janet Yellen. That hearing that she did yesterday was the semi-annual hearing in front of Congress and the Senate, too. There were senators asking questions. 2 hours and 41 minutes, Gregory. I got to sit through about a half hour. You want me? I'll watch the whole 2 hours and 41 minutes if you say it's necessary for the show. Oh, of Janet Yellen. I'm sorry.
Oh, that was her hearing?
Yeah, the semi-annual hearing.
That's a lot of time to listen to her.
Well, about half of it is whoever's turn it is to ask questions. They give an opening statement. So they burn 5 minutes. Just talking about absolutely worthless stuff. And then they ask her a question. She answers every question almost with a three-minute answer. It is the most painful, slow, boring process. Why would you even want to be part of that? If you're in Congress and this is what you get to do. I don't know what I'd do. I would come in with, I don't know, a Napoleon hat on or something just to get on the camera. And I'd say, this is all a waste of time, just so I'd be on the news. But if you say it's for the good of the show, I will sit through all 2 hours and 41 minutes of that hearing.
No. What I'd really like is a transcript of it.
I can get you that.
Let's see. There has to be one turn up next day or two. That's what we need is transcript. Then we can go pick it apart real quick.
Yeah. Well, look, it's going to be a heck of a transcript because 2 hours.
It's going to be a hell of a transcript. I don't know.
Now, she does sound a little more high on the economy. She sounds a little more positive. She wasn't talking a whole lot about slack. That was a word that was frequent for a while, and now it's fallen out of favor with the great Janet Yellen.
Yeah, but she has been hawkish at times for a while. The Jackson Hole meeting last year was one of those. But she doesn't walk the walk. So we'll see.
You're not going to let her forget that, are you? You're like a scorned spouse.
She has done it for years. She's cost me a few bottles of wine as well.
Oh, she
That's
did.
Serious.
She got me some bottles of wine.
Yeah.
Because I went negative on her. I went cynical. I went political. And I won doing it. Maybe we'll find you a transcript. I don't know if you even want to bother reading
but
this.
But how did you not raise it in January? Okay, I know you couldn't give a speech afterwards. Is that reason to not raise the rates to explain yourself? Greenspan didn't ever explain himself. You know when he explained himself? Before Congress or one of the, you know,
twice
the
a year.
Committee hearing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the only time he did.
No transcript yet.
No, I don't see it either.
Darn. They'll have it soon. They have the one from December already up.
Yeah, I saw that. There's a January one up as well for some reason. January 19th, 27. It was discussed central bank independence, financial technology at some meeting. It's probably a short one.
All right, so when we talk about Janet Yellen, we're trying to get her to raise the rates. We all understand that it has reverberating effects far beyond what is actually the federal funds rate and the exchange rate that banks have to use to maintain their deposits and whatnot. It sprinkles out into the investing world barely indirectly. It's almost a direct correlation. The annuities have been getting killed. The returns on your bank account, on your savings account, on your checking account, returns on your bonds, all these have been depressed. And it's created a different investing landscape. It used to be in some situations you'd want to use an annuity. Now with rates so low, it's fallen out of favor in some categories. When is a rate too low on an annuity?
I don't see that rates are too low on annuities. From what I've seen, is annuity sales are as large as they've ever been. Now, if you're looking at from SPIA standpoint, and that's
single
only
a premium,
single,
tell them what that means.
Single premium income annuity. We used to use them as one of the baskets or jobs we assign money and income planning, typically the first leg. But with the interest probably at 75 basis points, I can go buy a MINC is one, M-I-N-C, and you can get about 2.5%, and basically it's a short duration bond / treasury ETF. Does it move around some? Here's one way to explain that ETF, the way I look at it. Let's say somebody's guaranteeing you 0.5% interest rate. That's better than a lot of the money markets that are 0.5%. And you say, okay, that's good. That's better than my bank or broker. They're giving me 0.25%. I'll take the half. I know it's going to move around. And let's say it moves around 1.5%. Volatility of the movement. So I can guarantee you 0.5%. I know I've got movement. And worst case, I'm making 0.5%. So it's kind of like, let's say I'm putting my money out there and letting you, and we run a money market type of account. So I know I've got movement in there. He's making 0.5%. At the end of the day, I make at least 0.5% because I know I've got volatility of 1.5%. Or would you rather be the guy that gets the 2.5%, knowing that it is going to move around 1.5% during the year? What do most people want to do? Yeah, I like that ETF. I'll go for that 2.5, knowing it's going to move around some and paying me interest every month. And it ultimately always cleans itself up. So why would I use a SPIA at 75 basis points when I can take and plug in, say, 1.5 for a client on one that's paying 2.5 in interest every month, knowing we've got some movement in there? So that's why we don't use SPIAs, because if that's what they're referring to, yeah, the payouts are too low for income annuities. And I would use them only on a 60-month period certain. Period certain means 100% payout of the deposit over 60 months. But why would I only want 75 basis points? It may be less now as well. So we can go do an ETF that gives us more yield, a little bit of movement, but we get the income payout and a better return at the end of the day. And over 5 years, that's easy for it to cycle and level out. Whereas if we're doing fixed indexed annuities, we're basically leveraging interest rate. We're not necessarily worried about the payout.
When you say when we use the ETFs, do you mean an ETF-backed annuity or an actual ETF?
An actual ETF. Okay. For income. But the SPIA, when you kind of say, well, it's the lowest payouts ever. Yeah, it's SPIAs. But if you're going and getting a 5-year CD annuity, we have the 3.1% again. Let's see, who has worse payouts than that? Banks. You go to the bank, find a bank, give you 3.1% fixed interest rate over the next 5 years. I've got 2.8, 8.5, 2.9. I got 3.1. Those are good payouts, interest, and you can access your interest. They could send it to you every month, every quarter, every year. And we could leverage fixed indexed annuities. And fixed index annuities, what are they like? Rising interest rates. They love a hawkish Janet Yellen if she would just walk the walk.
So this is an even worse situation, though, across the pond, because I'm trying to figure out their retirement system. They either have a pension that's set up to them through the state, or their employer is required to have a pension on everyone. And what has been the case up until the middle of last year, Gregory, is whenever you turned 65, you had to take all that money and you had to go out on the market and buy a fixed annuity with it. You had to buy a lifetime income with it.
Well, that's the world we're in now, James. You pensions less than 25% of the people, less than 25% of the people have pensions anymore. You know, back in the 70s was the heyday. It was over 50% of the people had pension options. And actually, it's probably less than 20% today. But it keeps shrinking, and eventually it'll probably be, I'll just call it, under 15%. I probably think there'll be some situation. There's always a pension. Some company's doing well enough to say, yeah, we can handle that. We're going to make sure our employees have that option. So with that said, if you're wanting to create guaranteed lifetime income, you're going to have to go find an annuity. And then you need to understand more about how they're structured. The biggest thing people dislike about pensions is, well, what if I don't live too long and the wife doesn't, if I do spousal continuation? Because when we die, those underlying assets that bought it originally are not there anymore. Whereas you can use a fixed indexed annuity structured by assigning the right jobs. It's not using one, but using multiple to create income streams that increase over time. Probably could increase income overall over time by as much as 33% if you're structuring it correctly. And you still control the underlying assets. There's no poof, the money's gone. You both die, the underlying assets move on to the beneficiaries. I think that is a better long-term system than pensions, because the people hate giving up control of the underlying assets, and they don't trust the company's going to be there 20 years down the road.
Yeah, it's just it got tough in England. Their forced pension system, when the prices were driven down so much they were getting under 3% on their returns, they passed a law saying, all right, here's what you can do. You can do something else with that lump sum. What else could you do better than buy a fixed annuity for lifetime income? Is there another option? Because they've already walked this back and it got blocked in the courts. It's probably not going to be implemented. But they're tinkering with being far less socialist than our retirement system over here. 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. It's Swinging It Live with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio. I'd have a little dirt on my boots, but I'm taking you uptown tonight.
Oh, it was more time than I thought. Looking at the, what do we call this?
The next gen, the clock?
The clock, yeah. Hey, this is Winning at Life. It is the daily wrap. And we did clean our boots off this evening. No dirt on them. Wasn't that rough of a day, was it?
I had a pretty sweet day. I missed my nap, but other than that, it was fine.
Oh, I hate that for you. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks. That's James Parker. This is Financial Talk Radio, and it is live. We do this every evening at 7 o'clock till 8. Saturdays is the weekly wrap here on iHeartRadio from 10 a.m. to 1 o'clock. If you have a financial situation, what kind of situation are we referring to? Maybe it's that A-share mutual fund. Maybe it's that cash piled up in the bank. You're conservative and not knowing what to do with it. Or you're tired of being charged too much in fees. You're like, oh, I'm in a variable annuity. I'm so sorry. 504-260-0995. The email can be gregory@gregoryricks.com. So the website is gregoryricks.com. And also, as so many people do every day, download the Gregory Ricks and Associates app. Go to your app store and just do a Gregory Ricks search. If we're preempted, it allows you to cross over to iHeartRadio. You need to download that app as well, and you can pick us up on the stream. You can search for us for past shows on iTunes. We're just do some searches. Go to the website as well. You can download a podcast till your heart flutters in that case.
We've done more shows than you have time to listen to, trust me. So
6.5 years.
So I'm interested to see this experiment. They almost tried in England. They've already walked it back. But imagine if when you came to the end of your working life and you were going to turn on Social Security, instead of offering you the pension, they offered you the same thing a lot of employers do. And they said, okay, do you want the lump sum or the pension? That's about the equivalent of what they were. It was passed last year in the UK, and it just got halted in October. This thing almost was almost the law of the land, where they were going to buy out people's state pension. How cool would that be? Now, can we?
Now, how disastrous would that be? Because these people will, in a lot of cases, go through the money. Are you talking about Social Security being a lump sum choice?
Yes.
Oh, that would be totally disastrous.
Nah.
That is my opinion. Now, are there some people that are pretty sharp with it? Yeah, but let's go back to the basics here. This is blocking and tackling.
Okay.
Half the people don't have any money saved.
Right.
So you're going to give those people a choice of opting out of the monthly Social Security check and take a lump sum, which we know is going to be a discounted number.
Yep.
Because you're wanting to buy them out over the cheap. So
yeah,
once they spend through that money, there is no more resources. So where are they getting their food from? Paying that electric bill.
They have to move in with their kids, Gregory.
We'd have that much more people on every street corner.
No.
You've lost your mind.
You wouldn't let your parents come live with you? I would let my mom come live with me?
I only have one that would live with me.
Okay.
Because there's only one alive. And she has two income streams, and there's no way I would let her opt out as a lump sum. Remember, now, this would have to be a choice because we already know pensions, once it's turned on and you're receiving a pension check, they can't go back to you and try to buy you out of it.
Mm-hmm.
They can sell it to a third party that continues the agreement, but they can't go and buy you out. So she's not getting bought out. But this would be totally disaster. You know, the reason half the population has no money saved is they spend it. So if you give them the lump sum, oh, yeah, I'll take that. And then what are they living off of? So we take the half that's saving it, that has some sort of savings, half of them, I would not let do it either. It would only maybe be some of that last quarter of people that are smart enough to do the right thing. Why? They already have a lot of money saved. This just adds to that. And they'd hate for the Social Security to stop if they died. And I just, the lump sum is math not going to work. It'll bankrupt the government. Then you got all these people that don't get money, can't pay their Medicare premiums.
Who said anything about Medicare? You're not in my utopia yet.
And your utopia, everybody that draws Social Security pays a Part B Medicare premium. So how are they going to pay that from the lump sum? Then that makes the government worse because now they're trying to collect the money that they're not getting. It's total chaos. Yeah, we would go to hell in a handbasket.
We've got to make the Soylent Green out of something. How are we going to know which ones?
Oh, so you're going to tell them, we're going to shoot you if you go through your money and come back and ask for more. That's
no.
It? We're going to turn you into crackers?
It's not going to be the slaughterhouse just yet.
Tell them what Soylent Green is. I saw the movie, too, long time ago.
Yeah, Soylent Green. It's a dystopian, futuristic tale about how when the world food supply runs scarce, they start eating the losers of society.
Yeah, because they process them and turn them into crackers.
Yeah, then look, does it taste bad? Would you even know if I didn't tell you?
If you're starving, does anything taste bad?
No, absolutely not. Not if you're starving. We got it.
You have went down the wrong path here. I'm shocked.
Gregory, they almost did this in the UK.
Well, good damn thing they stopped it.
Okay, what if they did this? What if we just put one little modifier on it, and I think it would change a lot.
Be careful what rabbit hole you go down, you know?
No, fair enough, but this is why we like other countries to try crazy things first and learn from their mistakes. They can be our little laboratory. Oh. What if when you went to turn on Social Security, they offered you the pension, the monthly check, or the lump sum, but if you got the lump sum, you were required to buy a fixed annuity on the market with it. You had to buy some sort of income product. Still dangerous.
It's dangerous because are you dealing with people that are going to look at your best interest? Or are they going to assign it the right jobs, meaning ladder it correctly? You know, one reason we take on a lot of cases that we do is if we're not handling it, we don't trust anybody else to make sure they're looked out for. That's part of the philosophy. That's part of my attitude is like, gosh, if I don't help them, who are they going to trust? Because we darn sure know we're doing it the right thing by them.
But if it goes out like that, how does it bankrupt the taxpayers in D.C.?
Okay, give me the basis because you cut something off.
If we do the lump sum and they go out and they buy it on the private market, that could help, if not eliminate, the possibility that it would bankrupt DC. Because Social Security, you know, $100 million unfunded liability as it stands
the
now.
The problem we have is we've never set aside the Social Security taxes that's supposed to fund this. We have IOUs from the U.S. Treasury because they go and spend it. So if we're doing lump sums, where is that money coming from? It's coming from money we don't have, which escalates the debt.
It'll be the last.
It forces it to be front-end loaded. Yeah, 30 years from now, we'll be fine. But we're like jumped to $70 trillion in debt overnight.
Okay, but the longer you put this off, the worse it'll be. So let's do this now. Someone's going to get left holding this bag. I say it's us. Well, this will be our great gift to the country and for future generations that we took this one on the chin because someone had to. Two generations ago, we asked the guys to go storm the beaches of Normandy, and they took it on the chin. Here's what we're going to do. They made a big trust fund. The baby boomers spent it down, and then they spent out our share, and then they spent down your share, and then they left us the bill for the credit card they still spent on themselves. We just got to eat it at some point, Gregory.
If you're going to do something like that, why wouldn't you force every person, like if you're getting a welfare check, you're getting whatever, I'm talking about any income source, that you're then required to save 10%. It goes in save. It is at least got to go into treasuries or you go into something else. You have your choices, but you're required to withhold 10% besides your taxes. 10% is required to go into savings. It could go in your 401k and it can get matched, but everybody receiving some sort of it, self-employed, has to put away 10%. We have a better society in 20 and 30 years from now. Why? Everyone has savings. That's the better fix. And then we're growing to where we could start dialing back Social Security increases. Social Security might start being capped. Why? 100% of the people have some type of retirement savings instead of it's optional and half the people who do it and half can just crawl by on Social Security and Medicaid. That's if you're going to force or do something like that and not have to bankrupt the Treasury, and in 30 years, you've cycled through the whole economy.
Well, it sounds like you want to privatize Social Security.
No, I don't want to privatize it. I want it to stop growing.
Right, but we already have a system by which we take about 13% of our income and it's set aside in a special program that we access for
eternal
income.
No, this is you save 10% in addition to what we tax because the government uses that money now as an IOU. So you can't go pull 13% of all the money out of the budget. Then you're driving up the debt. No, Social Security stays in place. It just stops growing.
All right, we'll look at the numbers on the market. A lot of green out there. History made again today. We'll break it down for you. If you have a financial situation, quit screwing around. Call Gregory, 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. This is Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio.
this every evening at 7. If you would like to join the show, have a financial situation, not sure what to do, or how about that financial fix for a better tomorrow? 504-260-0995.
All right, let's go ahead and look at the numbers. I want to argue with you more on the UK system because I think that would work better.
Lump summing out?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you know, there's some times where I'll recommend the pension versus lump sum. You know why?
Because it's a better deal? Or because you don't trust?
One is a better deal.
You don't trust the dude with the money?
Sometimes there's a trust. It might not be them. It might be who they're going to use to help them with that lump sum. You can't. This is guaranteed money that you're taking a lump sum from, so you can't go messing it up. You can't go losing it to an 08 type of event or buying cars, adding a garage to the house. This is for income purposes, not for spending.
But look.
Oh, here's another thing. Let me interrupt you.
Go ahead.
Okay. How's the UK handling it? So we know a pension, if you take a lump sum, you can roll it over to an IRA. It stays tax deferred, and you're only taxed on distributions. So Social Security, we know it's taxed depending on income. So if you were to take the lump sum, is this an after-tax account? Is this a pre-tax account? Or is it partially taxed? You've not even delved into that side. What are the UK people doing about that? Is it taxable? So just throw that monkey wrench into the mix.
Well, you know, actually, in my reading today, it's not taxed. And what they do, most of them, and this isn't a rule. This has kind of become the cultural standard on what they do with it. Most of them cash out about 25% of it, and then they can reinvest the other 75%. There was that little window where they could, that little freedom window from about June until it got shut down in October. So how many months was that? Where there was a handful of people that could actually were able to exercise the option of taking the cash out. And most of them didn't take all the cash out. Most of them took 25% of the cash out and reinvested the other 75% in a lifetime annuity stream, lifetime income stream.
Okay.
So we got a little taste of the experiment.
So is the UK forcing it to go to annuity, or they can
now
do whatever they want?
Depending on what annuity class you're in. If you have a state job, which is about half the economy is government, because they have so many things are socialized over there. You know, every nurse is a government employee. So about half of the country has a defined benefit pension plan, like a postal worker or anyone else who works for government over here. So we're not talking about those people. We're not talking about people that get pensions from a major corporation. The small little part of the population that they were experimenting on were the entrepreneurs, which is a lot smaller segment of the population than it is over here. But when you make your own contributions to your own plan, there was a few thousand people that actually got to cash out. And what most of them did, the average was 25% they would take in cash, and the other 75% they would still put it in an annuity.
Wondered how that compared to the state-sponsored program. What I want to see is the numbers. What would they have received if they continued the state program? What if they had pushed 100% of it to the annuities, and then what does it look like with them cashing some? So doesn't surprise me the average was cashing some.
And they have they had a little more of a crush on their annuity yields than we did, because they have people that are forced into it at a higher rate than we are. So when we were down, you know, we're still crying about our 3% annuities. They were lower than that. And so that was, it's almost like, you might as well just give me the cash. If you're not going to let me get any return on it, what's the point? That was an interesting little chance we had. Because what if they did it for the whole country? What if we did it for the whole country? Still not impressed, are you? All right.
Not at all.
No, let's look at the market news then. That can impress you, right? We're history being made. Highest close ever in the history of the Wall Street. I'm sorry, the Dow Jones. Highest ever, 20,611.
Well, what was the close yesterday?
20,500 and change, or no, 20,000.
No, it was the highest record close ever.
Oh, yeah, ever.
And the day before that?
Highest record.
Highest record close ever. Okay. Just putting it in perspective. Okay.
History's being made here. That's what happens. It was up 107 points today, 107 and 45 and change. So that was up a little more than a half a percent, 20,611 and 86 and change. The S&P was also up a half a percent. It's now sitting at 2,349 and a quarter. The NASDAQ was up 0.6 of a percent, 5,819. We had the Russell up 7.5 of a percent, 3/4 of a percent. Sitting at 820. Now, crude oil is one of my rare little red spots on the chart here. But the other ones are up. Gas is up. Gasoline's up. Gold up. Silver up. Copper up. Gold also doing pretty well over the last... What kind of streak is it on here? An 11-month streak? It's been in pretty positive territory. It's now sitting in $1,235.20 per precious ounce.
We'll pull up a gold chart.
Well, let me pull it up on this TV then. I want to see this.
Let's see. Where are we looking at?
I just remember gold spent quite a bit of time in the 1,100-something range, and now it's been pulling out of that on a pretty steady clip.
That's 1 year chart showing where it had made its high. Looks like July, August showed some really good peaks, worked its way back down through December, and then started a climb back in January. We had that February dip right there, end of January, and then it's kind of working its way back up. It had a sell off and now moving back up. We had what? 0.25% increase today. I think gold continues working its way back up. Maybe slow, but steady.
Can you look at that 3-year chart?
3-year.
Yeah, that's it.
There we go.
Yeah, okay. So I'm thinking of it was lower than this in 2016, but it was higher than this for most of 2016. I see.
Yeah, 2016's a good year. This probably is going to turn out to be on the back end of the year as well.
Now, my biggest positive territory mover isn't an actual index, really, or a security. It's my volatility index. It was up 11.45% today, so it's now at 1197. A little bit of fear in the water, but historically speaking, I mean, even in recent history, still pretty calm out there. Do you remember all the conversations we're having where I'm saying we need to plow some money in this because it's going to pop up? Well, in the VIXie, we need to try and capitalize off the VIX's move. Well, listen, I was saying that for a month. It hasn't popped yet.
No.
So we would have just been sitting here rope-a-doping paying fees. Right? Because these are options and you got to...
Seeing it go against you. Look, it is up some from when we talked. It was in $10 and change. It did have a 11.45% increase today.
Right.
But still, when you look at a chart, 1 year chart, that's a serious sitting. Well, come on, let's pull over. Okay. Try it one more time. There you go. Okay, so let's look at we're at a 1 year chart right there, and it had a big increase, but that's like nothing. When you look at the chart, boom. Yeah, it had a spike up.
Say when.
I'm trying to win.
Okay,
see right there, that spike up right at the end.
Is that today?
It matches right there. You know, just about.
Say when. You got to. They don't see the chart.
Oh. Well, I'm just looking at a few days ago, basically beginning of February, we kind of had a peak where we were at about this area, about $11.90 on the VIX, and that's kind of about where it's climbed to right now, is in that close to 12, but it had dropped down in between that, and we had a much lower point in the back end of January there. So really, when you're kind of looking, I don't know why we got a little bit of fear buying, but there's nowhere near any fear based on what the market keeps doing every day.
Well, it looks like a row of shark's teeth, and every once in a while you get one of those peaks and it'll come right back down. So this is sort of a strike while the iron's hot, but you don't actually buy this. You have to buy an ETF that's somewhat linked to this, and it's not as sharp in its volatility, which is easy to take advantage of, but just keeping an eye on that for you. All right, if you have a financial situation not quite sure what to do, you better call Gregory, 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. You're listening to Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio.
Singing, it's Train, Drive By, pretty cool song. Saw them at iHeart Festival. I don't know why my mind went blank on that. This is Winning at Life. It is the daily wrap that we do every evening at 7 o'clock. We have a few minutes left. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks, along with James Parker. It's live financial talk radio. If you have a financial situation or you just disagree with us, hey, that could happen. I know it's rare. 504-260-0995. What's probably happening more often, you disagree with James Parker on some of his take.
Like, and
his
you should.
Orange juice futures, his Bitcoin, his love in the UK buyout system. It'd be disastrous.
I just got a bunch of stock in Blockbuster and asbestos. What could possibly go wrong? But Gregory, look, you don't have to tell him that. Look what Gregory drives. Look what I drive. You know whose advice to follow. Hey, another big news here. It's not necessarily out of the financial world, but it will impact your pocketbook. The IRS has dealt a blow to the Obamacare mandate. The tax agency has now stopped requiring individual filers to indicate whether they maintained health coverage or paid the mandate penalty as required under law. So really, it's a minor change when you look at the entirety of the form. It's literally just a single line being taken out of the tax form, but it makes a huge difference. It's almost like they're getting ready to not have to bother with this thing at all. And the line, while it will still exist, will not be mandatory. It will only be optional. You're not listening to any of this. You're stuck on Southwest, aren't you?
What are you talking about?
The line in your tax forms where you have
It's all going away. It's changing. It's done.
Good.
It didn't work. Yeah, that's first step. Why should we worry about taxing people? We're undoing this.
Do you have any problems with the process by which these changes are happening? Shouldn't this go through Congress and they vote on a bill that changes the law, not the IRS just deciding on their own, we're not going to enforce this little line?
They've been told what's coming. So do we need to get into this? What, we're going to chase? And then you're going to focus on this group. Well, we'll chase their butts for years because it was on that 1040 that year. No, it's over and done. Moving on. There's going to be a new system that's not going to be a tax either.
That's the only thing
that kept it going to this point, simply because Congress passed a tax, and they named it Affordable Health Care Act, and then we created the acronym Obamacare. What's more interesting is why Warren Buffett put $2.2 billion into Southwest Airlines last quarter. They must love them some love. LUV is the ticker symbol.
Well, they had to do it on the sly because if you buy, what was it, 43.2 million shares at once, the market will notice. But if you spread it out in the background, and I guess what we have, like some Smurf purchasers that go.
Well,
in.
let's see how they spread it out. Can we see it on the chart? It was in the fourth quarter, so let's look at the last 6 months. Well, looks to me like it had a positive effect on the stock.
Well, what we can see here in October, there's a little bit of a drop. But other than that, it's a steady move up. I mean, and it's consistent, too. After being flat through the summer, it started to go up at the end of September.
They weren't hiding too much, were they?
Well, in October, it looks like they had a – could that be an earnings report? They get hit by the earnings bust? Is there any other explanation?
Could be.
That sharp downturn? That
could be that's when the buying started right after that. They just said in the fourth quarter. They didn't say all of the fourth quarter. They just said the buying was in the fourth quarter.
So that dip may have been what prompted the buying to begin. Is that what you're saying? That's what they were looking for?
Yeah, could have been. Right point to start buying shares consistently.
Now, when you see
accumulating shares.
And he has to go public with it.
Yeah, because he has to disclose when he takes a certain size position in a company.
So when you see one of the titans put $2.2 billion in a stock, is it smart usually to follow suit? Or did the low price, the bargain already happen and you're too late?
That didn't go so well for his buy-in to IBM. He's not right 100% of the time. He's just right a lot of the time, which makes him very wealthy. What do you have to be right? More than half the time.
So it's already, if you had started when he started buying in October, you could get around $40 a share. Now it's almost 60. So it's gained 50%.
Yeah, and it's probably still undervalued for the quality of company that it is and the business that it does. And it always flies full airplanes. It's been years since I was on one that I would consider empty.
And I'm not sure. I've never been on an empty Southwest flight.
But majority of the time, every seat is full.
So what's got you so interested in this? You thinking about getting it?
We've held it before on a run up. We'll look at this. It's had quite a run.
Something else we talked about.
It pays a dividend as well.
Something else we talked about on the break there. Under Armour has become the Nickelback of stocks. People now love to beat it up far beyond what it... You know, the criticism it requires.
Yeah, I'm looking at a 30. What is it? Where are we at? 1 month right there. I've been just kind of interested to see. Yeah, it got crushed, and now it's kind of coming back. See the back end of that chart right there over the past 30 days? Liking that.
Give it the year chart.
Let's go to the 1 year chart. You read my mind. See?
Steady down.
Steady down. And now, is there a climb? We're talking about a stock that was at one point over the past year, a year ago, was at about 50, well, call it $44. Now we go to are we at the 5 year? It just won't pull.
No, there is no 5 year.
So still go back to one, go to year to date. Yeah, it takes us back to, what, April of last year. Just steady declining, and a giant drop was punished for that quarter. Does it climb out?
It's down 52% over the last year. That's enough, right? You can't beat it up more than that. Under Armour's still popular. There's still Steph Curry running around making three-pointers, wearing their shoes. They've got all the commercials. They've got the contracts with the college football teams and the NFL. I don't think they have NFL team contracts. That might be a pickup, huh?
Just a thought.
Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks is for entertainment purposes only. None of this is an endorsement to buy or sell or whatever, any financial product. Does that keep us covered there?
That keeps us covered. We're providing observations. But when we talk about A-Share mutual funds, we're trying to help you save money because why buy a share mutual fund when you can buy an institutional class mutual fund?
Does everyone know what you're talking about?
A share mutual funds have front end loads, which they're taking a commission, a 12B1 fee, and typically it has an expense ratio of 1% over 1%, to where you can buy an institutional class fund, mutual fund. It has no 12B1 fee, has no upfront commission. In fact, that A share that's sitting in your portfolio, go to, say, Yahoo Finance and do a search. Or go to Morningstar, do a search. Do they have, or Google Finance, do they have a sister fund that's an institutional or advisor class? A lot of times they do. So then you're saying, well, they sold me an A share mutual fund, took a 5.75% fee, took a 0.25 12B1 fee, and my expense ratio is like 1.2. But I see over here, the same family of funds has an institutional class fund, no 12B1 fee, no upfront charge, and the expense ratio is 0.65%. Ooh, why didn't my guy mention that to me? That's the question you'd have to ask. And that's what we provide here, is that type of information. And that is not for entertainment purposes. That's for money-saving purposes.
Can you break down in 30 seconds what's a 12B1 fee and what's an expense ratio?
It's a marketing expense that's built in, but really it's another way to give trail commissions to the rep that sold the account.
When you say trail commissions, they clock every year.
Yeah.
Expense ratio.
You pay it every year. Yeah. And it gets paid to them every year.
What's the expense ratio?
Expense ratio is the cost of operating the fund. And seems that front-end loaded funds, it costs a lot more to operate the fund. What's up with that?
Front-end loaded is them just taking a piece of the pie, right? That's straight commission, straight gravy. All right. That's going to do it for today's episode. Your home away from the show, GregoryRicks.com and the Gregory Ricks & Associates app. We'll be back live to do this tomorrow at 7. I'm James Parker. This has been Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio.
Gregory Ricks is copyrighted by Gregory Ricks for the private use of our audience. Any unauthorized use of this broadcast without express consent by Gregory Ricks is prohibited.